All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuckadelics? What's happening? I am Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. What's happening today is I've Gary Clark Jr. on the show today, a guitar player. And you know me and guitar players, and you know me and guitar. So we talk some guitar. That's going to happen for you shortly. And I have some new tour dates to announce. Some stateside club dates as I plow through the new hour or so of material. April 18th through 20th at the American Comedy Company in San Diego. May 16th through 18th at Goodnight's Comedy Club in Raleigh, North Carolina. May 23rd through 25th at the Comedy Club on State in Madison, Wisconsin. June 6th through 8th at Vermont Comedy Club in Burlington, Vermont. And June 13th through 15th at Helium Comedy Club in Richmond Heights, Missouri, right outside St. Louis. Go to WTFpod.com/tour for ticket info. Also, the UK dates are there. The Colorado dates are there. So it's shaping up. It's shaping up to be a real tour with a mixture of small theaters, medium-sized theaters, and comedy clubs. I'm going to get out there. I'm going to get out there into the country, and I'm going to do the thing, and I'm going to eat some food in different places, but not like I used to eat. Man, I think I've only been to St. Louis once. Is that possible? I rapped on Glow. I don't know if I told you. I don't think I could have on Monday because I rapped on Monday morning. I shot my last scene for this season of Glow, season 3. It went great. And it was sad and exciting, and they're all still shooting. But maybe on Friday I'll go when everybody else wraps and hang out and eat the ice cream that I'm going to, you know, contribute to for a truck, for the crew. I don't know if you know that about most TV shoots. I don't know about film shoots so much. But at the end of each episode, usually the director will throw for some sort of gift type of truck to come. And the last day, I guess me and the gals are going to chip in and get an ice cream truck. So if there's any people on the crew listening to this, and I just spoiled that for you Friday, don't look at it as it being spoiled. Look at it as, hey, we're going to get ice cream on Friday. Yes, that's it. Anyway, hooly booly. Ha. I got a guitar player coming in. He's not going to play guitar, sadly. He didn't bring one. I got some here, but sadly I did not ask him. I don't know why. Sometimes it's a little tricky to record here. But we did get off on a talk. I want to make sure I have this to reference you. Hear that? Yeah. I'm going to tell you what that is in a minute because I just had to find it on my phone. It's interesting. You know, Gary Clark Jr., where did I first see him? I know that I saw him open for the Rolling Stones in San Diego when I was with Dean. I know I saw him open for Derek Trucks when I went to see them at the Universal Amphitheater. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, but I didn't remember to ask him about it, I think he was with Clapton and Jimmy Vaughn over there at the Forum when Clapton was there, when I went to that, when Jimmy played over here. And I didn't even ask him about that. We did talk a bit about him, you know, working with Clapton and Keith Richards and other people. But, you know, we got off on the guitar thing. He smoked a little weed before and we kind of just drifted in. It's so funny when people ask me if they can smoke weed. I'm like, yeah, go ahead. And they're like, no, I'm not going to do it in here. He said, yeah, I'm not going to. I'll do it outside. I'm like, ah, oh, damn it. You know, at almost 20 years sober, if I'm around it, man, I'm not doing it, but maybe I can get a little something, right? Huh? Didn't work out that way. Thank God, because I don't need to live with that burden of a contact buzz. And how much was I part of that? How much should I encourage that? Shouldn't the answer be like, no, man, you know, I'm sober. It'd be really helpful if you just do it outside, as opposed to like, wherever you want, man. Come on, do it right here. Blow it in my face. Like I'm a kitten. I should wrap this up pretty quickly here because I do have to go. I got to take fucking Buster back to the vet for the follow-up. You know, he's acting full-on, man. Full-on crazy. Just, full-on Buster back to his old self. But yeah, I think I should go get those blood levels checked. I probably should get my own blood levels checked. Can I do that at the vet? Would that be weird? You know, you're going to take Buster's. Can you just take a little vial of mine and run it through the machine, see where I'm at? See if I have feline leukemia or FIV or, you know, perhaps some other strange feline disease? Or should I go to my regular doctor? I probably should. So heading into this conversation with Gary Clark Jr., like I had to like get in it, get into the Gary Clark catalog, the new album, This Land, I believe it's called. Am I right? Yes. That's out now, but he's got a few other records out, and he got pretty big for a couple big live records. And that was the interesting thing. There's a couple interesting things about this conversation is that there are guys that I respect that have a tremendous respect for Gary. So it was great to sort of like enter the catalog and know that, that people that I respect are, you know, coming to him with a reverence. And, you know, he can certainly fucking play guitar and sing. But this album is, you know, it's kind of a, you know, it's a mixed bag of kind of blues, ballads, a little R&B, some hip hop element to it. And that's sort of where he's at. But what was interesting about the conversation with him was that, you know, he was being poised to be the next guitar guy, you know, the guitar god guy. And, you know, he had to reckon with that. And I thought that was interesting. And I also thought it was interesting. He started in Austin, you know, under the tutelage to some degree of Jimmy Vaughn, Stevie Ray's brother, who I've talked to, who's one of my favorite guitar players. So, you know, we're coming in hot with some guitar talk. But right out of the gate, I referenced pretty quickly that little piece of what I just played you is something that Matt Sweeney, the guitar player who's been on the show, turned me on to. And he just sent me, you know, when people send you a video link, it's, and you can find it yourself. Yeah, even if you're not a guitar player, you'll fucking be like, what the fuck? The YouTube video is Magic Sam, Magic Sam's Boogie 1969. This is Magic Sam. He's not even playing his own guitar, and he's laying out this riff. And Sweeney sent it to me. I'm like, what the fuck is that? And Sweeney said he was going to figure it out. So for some reason, that was in my head because I listened to a Gary Clark Jr. live record and I heard a song on there, one of his songs, and it had like sort of the skeleton of that riff. And then like it struck me like, oh, fuck, man. Because I tried to figure that out, but it's out of my wheelhouse unless I spent like, maybe I could spend the rest of my life trying to figure it out. I'm sure there are guitar players who'd be like, no problem, listen. But, you know, it's a tricky groove. But I felt like when I was listening to Gary's thing, I can't remember what song it was on the live album. And I was like, oh, no, he tried to figure that thing out. And that's the residue of it in this song. So when we start talking about this thing at the beginning of this conversation, that's what we're talking about. I just wanted you guys to be in the loop on that because there's a giddiness to it, to the moment of us both know, you know, of him knowing immediately what I was talking about, as if like, you know, we had talked about it before. It was a pretty beautiful moment. And he was a little buzzed. So it must have been an even better moment for him. I don't know. Oh, you guys. Maybe someday things will be okay again. But until then, we do have music. We do have maybe a little time to turn back or at least stop the slow frying and of this planet. But are we going to be able to stop the bugs? You know, the bugs are going to win, the little ones, the bugs without functioning bodies, just renegade strands of DNA, the viral bugs, the bacteria bugs. The ugly bugs that eat the pretty bugs. Man, is this turning into a downer? God damn it. God damn it. So now that I've laid it out and you know exactly what, you know, I'm referring to when me and Gary get off on this, it's Magic Sam, Magic Sam's Boogie, 1969. You can watch it on YouTube. Oh, it's fucking gets me off. So Gary's new album is called This Land. It's available now wherever you get your music. It's a great album. People love it. And this is me. Oh, I got to stop it. I'm going to watch it. This is me talking to Gary Clark Jr.
I like to smoke herb.
Yeah, you can. Wait, you want to smoke in here?
No, I don't smoke in here. I don't want to smoke yet, but is it cool if I step out for a second? And go?
Right now? Before? Yeah.
You sure with that? You cool?
Yeah, I'm cool.
Awesome.
I've had people who need to smoke in the garage.
Nah, man. I don't want to do that to anybody.
I don't mind it. I quit a long time ago, but, you know, it's nice to get a freebie occasionally.
Get that second.
Yeah.
Deep breath.
Yeah. Kevin Smith was in the old garage. I could barely breathe.
Yeah.
So now when I pointed out the gold top with the P90s and I said, that's the best guitar, your first response was, really? Like you've played that guitar.
I have.
And what is your feeling about it?
I think it's a great guitar, but I'm tall and it comes with back problems.
Really?
Things heavy.
I think this is a reissue of a 56, and it don't feel as heavy. Is that a heavy one? It's not, right?
No, actually.
Right. Some of those Les Pauls are heavy as fuck,
yeah.
Like a custom.
Yeah.
Is heavy.
I got to play Hubert Sumlin's.
Oh, really? He played a what did he top. Play? A gold top. Top. Oh, really?
Yeah, it was solid, man.
Oh my God!
Solid.
Now, I think somebody. I don't know if I saw it correctly or he really said it. That Jason Isbell said that maybe old guitars aren't necessarily all they're racked up to be, but some of them are, huh?
Some of them are. I've picked up a couple of old ones and they're just planks of wood.
Yeah, but did someone fuck with it? I mean, was there something different about his other than it being his?
I don't think so. I think it was just right how it was, man.
But those things, those P90s, they just break up. It's weird. If you crank them up with no effects at all, the notes just like, just come unglued.
It's
at
like
the end.
Weird, gnarly, fucked up sounding thing. I love it, man. A little small amp too, like a little small Fender like that.
Like that one?
Perfect.
That thing's crazy. That's like you saw my stereo, and this is the other thing I spent money on is this fucking amp. Because you can't find those for cheap unless you're lucky. Maybe in Texas.
Yeah.
You might find one, dumb old person who's got one in their basement from their kid who had it in the 60s who passed away in Nam or something.
Right.
But I think they're probably running out too.
Yeah. I go, look, I'm not going to lie. I was going to not tell anybody.
Yeah.
I always try and go look for something, see if somebody's slipping,
Have you found some?
Nah.
Never?
Nah. There's so many guitar players
in Texas.
So, we all think we got like this secret. We're like running around, got nothing.
But I didn't know anything about this other than someone said the best thing, and I repeat this all the time. Someone about that particular amp, so I think that's like a 57 Deluxe or a 58. They said, it's a one trick pony, but it's a good trick.
It's a great trick.
What are you playing through?
I'm playing through Fender Vibro Kings.
Old ones?
No, I'm playing through new ones. I mean, we run around so much on tour that the old gear classic stuff, I just got to keep it at the house.
Oh, really? You're afraid?
Up. Yeah, well, just recently
shipping
guitars and stuff, open a case and headstock and
the
neck is...
Snapped?
Snapped,
happened?
It's happened a few times.
With what, like SGs?
Yeah, I had a Strat.
A Strat neck broke?
Yeah.
How the fuck did that happen?
TSA.
Really?
Throwing my shit.
So when you open that case up, has it already snapped and it's just a mess?
Strings all...
So sad.
I know.
It's so sad, man.
It is.
I was trying to think of a riff that, because I listened to, I think it was it's somebody's boogie.
Sam's boogie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Magic Sam?
Yeah.
Killing on Earl King's guitar.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, like the flowers.
Yeah. What the fuck is that?
Oh man, I love showing people that video who've never seen it before.
Me too. Have you figured it out?
No.
Because you on the live record, you do one that's a little close to that groove, right?
I do one that's close, but that's because I couldn't figure out the other one. Right, so I was like, I'll just settle.
That's what I was wondering. I'm like, I was listening to it. I'm like, you almost got it. And I know,
you called me out.
Just like, because I'm like, it's so close, but I wasn't mad at you about it. My thought was like, if he can't figure it out, I'm not even going to waste my time trying to figure it out. If that's as close as he's going to get.
Yeah, I gave up, man. I detoured, took a left turn. Right.
But, you know, like, I can't, like, I'm not great at figuring things out. And that's a great thing about the blues is, like, sort of you get the idea and you run with the idea. I got the idea. And yeah, I just own it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Interpretation.
So, Austin, that's where you come from?
Austin, Texas, born and raised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What part of town, what'd your dad do?
What part of town? Kind of southwest.
Yeah.
Like on the edge of the city in the country.
Yeah.
A spot called Oak Hill.
Uh huh. You got brothers and sisters?
I grew up with four sisters.
Four sisters?
Yeah, I got four sisters.
And
I'm right in the middle.
Yeah. On the edge of town.
On the edge of town.
What was your family's business?
My mom was an accountant, so she she was an accountant for like Capital Metro, which is public transport.
Yeah.
Boarding milk, so we used to get like chocolate milk from time to time. She would bring it home, and it was like the best day ever. And my dad sold anything and everything from shoes to cars to clothes to
sales guy
houses.
Yeah, anything, a hustler.
Anything to keep the lights on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, are they still around?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
They're still around. They follow me everywhere.
Do they?
Yeah, man. It's cute.
Do you at least fly them?
No.
They just come?
They just come.
They get in their car and come?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
When did you start playing?
1996.
Out of nowhere? How old were you?
I was 12. So,
yeah.
So, not out of nowhere. A friend of mine down the street, she had a band.
Yeah.
Her name's Eve Monse, and she had a black Fender Strat and a Fender twin with the red knobs.
Yeah.
Seen those things?
Yeah, I have.
And it was just loud as fuck. And
yeah, so, that's a later one. It's not like a new one, right?
Yeah, like an 80s or something.
Did it have the pop-out volume drive? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, all that stuff. And so it was, she had a band. It was an all-girl band. A bunch of cute girls playing in the garage. They had basketball courts.
Punk rock?
And her dad would fix video games, and he had a bunch of like arcades, so we would just go hang out. That was a place. That was the coolest place to be.
Sounds like the best place to be. There's the guitars, amps, and video games.
Exactly. So I just, you know, I started getting interested in the guitar. So about a year later, I ended up just kind of breaking my folks down, and they got me one.
Yeah, but so when you were just like looking at it and getting into it and watching people play it, it just appealed to you? Did you try to pick it up before you?
Yeah, I tried to pick it up. My dad had some guitars in the house, and I was always curious. Actually, my first introduction to guitar was seeing Tito Jackson play.
Really?
Yeah, like seeing, you know, young kids, you know, look like me.
Yeah.
You know, in a band.
He can kind of play too, right?
Yeah, he's like a blues
guy. Yeah, right. I remember later when he did solo stuff, it was sort of like, shit. Like, mm-hmm. He played.
Yeah, they did this, I got this tape, they did this cover of Isaac Hayes' Walk On By.
Yeah.
And he's playing like the fuzz wah-wah parts.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, what is that sound, you know? And I was like, I need that.
The fuzz wah-wah sound.
It got me. I was it was over. You know?
And you were like 10?
Yeah.
Nine, it's 10, so funny that like that one sound that makes that's the magic thing. Like that, like, you know, like it locks in when you're really young. Like, how do you make that noise?
Mm-hmm.
And it landed.
I need that voice too.
So what did you, what was the first guitar then? What were the ones hanging around the house?
My dad's guitar was an old Silvertone.
With an amp?
An old acoustic? Silvertone acoustic that I actually ended up breaking. I tried to take it down off the wall and play it.
Well, you broke it?
Yeah, I busted it.
Man.
And I just recently went to my parents' house and it's still busted up, but I feel bad. I gotta go get that thing fixed.
Get the Silvertone fixed. Get him a new guitar. Does he play?
Yeah, he plays a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, he plays a little bit. Plays keys, you know, too. Soul guy.
So always.
Funkadelic.
Yeah.
Bernie Worrell.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Makes the noises.
Eddie Hazel. That's
it. You have fuzz all over.
Yeah, exactly.
You're surrounded by fuzz.
Surrounded by the fuzz. Can't get away from it. But my first guitar was an Ibanez RX 20.
Mm. I can't picture it.
It's just it's kind of got the body of a Strat.
Oh yeah,
you know, but
two
humbuckers.
Oh, humbuckers on the body of a Strat.
Yeah. That was it. What about you?
My first guitar was actually a deluxe copycat. There was a brand of guitar called Copycat that made copies that were like $100. Like it was a fine starter out electric. Mm-hmm. I think my first acoustic was an old Harmony that my old man had, Harmony F-hole acoustic. And then the first guitar I bought was a blonde Tele that was heavy as fuck. Not that one.
Mm-hmm.
So that the one I had ended up, I think it's in some... I think some punk rock girl has it now. Because I before I really knew how to play, I hung around a guitar store and, you know, they had a guy that painted guitars and, you know, I would order parts for guitars and I made really cool guitars, but I couldn't really play them.
Right.
But
right.
I enjoyed the, I had this monster guitar, but all I could really play was like Johnny B. Goode, you know, maybe.
Man, that's still pretty cool. The guy who plays bass in my band, Johnny Bradley, he's the same way, man. He'll take parts and put them all together. Between him and you and my guy Dave, I could probably open up a shop, do something pretty cool.
It's fun because I don't know if it really makes a difference, especially it didn't make a difference to me because I didn't know about tone or nothing. I could barely play, but I knew it was cool that you could buy this shit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you I could have a guy paint it, but the Tele got painted cherry red and I put brass equipment on it and then I traded it to a roommate for Coke back in the day and then he had it for years and then I heard he became a professor at UC Davis and he's a poet and he gave it to his buddy's daughter who was in the punk band. So I'm like, as long as it has a life.
Damn.
It's funny that I was able to track it.
Wow. That's pretty good.
So who started teaching you?
I started teaching myself, really. Just listening to stuff on the radio. My friend Eve would show me something.
Chords,
power chords, really.
Yeah.
You know, show me the Jimmy Reed.
Yeah.
You know, straight up blues stuff.
Keeps that weird five open on the turnaround. Like when he...
Yeah.
Someone just showed me that. I'm just learning this shit.
I learned that from Jimmy Vaughn, who we both...
Right. I learned it from Jimmy Vivino, who probably learned it from Jimmy Vaughn.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a good group of guys to be learning stuff from.
Well, yeah, so that's Austin. But like, so you're just teaching yourself? You never took lessons?
I never really took a formal lesson. We would do stuff in school sometimes. We had this kind of guitar class
where
a bunch of kids would get together and share, and, you know, guitar magazines and figure out tabs and,
and
stuff
that.
And, you know,
I still don't know how to do tabs. I got to figure it out. It's pretty easy, right?
It's been so long, but yeah, it's...
In terms of, it just shows you where the lead is.
Yeah, so, you know.
Self-taught through tabs
and just listening to records, trying to figure stuff out, watching, as soon as I got my guitar, Stevie Ray Vaughan, a tribute to Stevie Ray Vaughan was playing, where it was Jimmy, his brother,
in Robert, town?
It was Austin City Limits.
Okay. Jimmy, his brother, his brother, who else? And the original Double Trouble band?
Original Double Trouble, Robert Cray, Eric Clapton, Bonnie Raitt. Buddy Guy, B.B. King. I think there might be somebody else that I'm missing, but it was like everybody.
Yeah.
And so I got my guitar and I don't know what to do with it. And like it seemed like the next week or whatever, I'm sitting there on a Saturday. And
you were watching it live?
No, it wasn't live. It was a rerun or whatever. Yeah. But it was that. And then they played Stevie Ray Vaughan's performances from 1983 and then like the 1989.
Yeah.
It blew my mind, man.
Yeah.
Blew my mind. So I recorded that tape and learned that. Pausing and rewinding and figuring out where people's hands were. And
That was it from Stevie.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The thing about Stevie is you listen to him and you know, you're like, and it happens very quickly in your mind is like, that must be the end of this lick. Oh, no, it's not. Oh, it's going to keep going. You know what I mean?
I do. Does that bother you?
No, I love it. I mean, that's the thing that I like about it. Just sort of like, how did he just get all that in?
Mm-hmm.
How did he play over the turnaround and end up in the right place?
Mm-hmm.
With all those notes and all that style.
It's a lot.
It is, man. But like, it's weird because I love Jimmy. Like, Jimmy was my guy more than Stevie.
Really?
Yeah, those first three Fabulous Thunderbirds records, the way he played so clean and so decisively, it was, like, great to me.
Yeah, he knows exactly what he's going to do. This is what it is. And if I don't, I'm going to back up. And if you're uncomfortable, I'm going to let you deal with it.
But so, okay, so you're watching that and you're trying to work out Jimmy.
Yeah.
Jimmy Ray Vaughan, or Stevie Ray. And you were able to, what about Hendrix? I mean, because that was always, actually for me, the liability of Stevie Ray was how much he, you know, listened to Hendrix. Like, mm-hmm. I like Hendrix, but I kind of put Hendrix in his own place. And when I hear people, like, you know, kind of really kind of pulling from him, I'm like, that's Hendrix.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. I mean, maybe I'm an asshole, but
it's undeniable.
Yeah,
you can't not.
But he had all that Tex-Mex shit. You know, that Texan. You know, kind of. I don't even know where that comes from with the Vaughn Boys, Jump Blues stuff. I don't know where it comes from, but it's uniquely, because I can hear it on your first record too. There's a rhythm to it that comes directly from those guys and whatever they're following. Do you ever track it?
Yeah, a little bit. Tracking it back to, you know, Lightning, Hopkins,
yeah.
T-Bone,
right.
Walker.
Oh, yeah. I think T-Bone Walker wrote all of the licks.
Wrote all of the licks.
Yes, they're all there. You know, you have to find them, but every blues lick that everyone's using is in a T-Bone Walker song somewhere.
Sure.
Right?
Sure, exactly. And tone as well.
Yeah.
Beautiful tones.
So you were going back. When did you start, like, you know, actually doing that? When were you able to kind of hold your own and play?
Yesterday?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah. It changes night for night.
Hold my own and play. You know, I guess I did a talent show in eighth grade.
Oh, really?
And we kind of won a talent show in eighth grade.
What'd
Me
you
and my
play?
Friend Eve, we played Pride and Joy, Stevie
yeah.
Ray Vaughan.
Yeah, yeah. Just to show you?
Me and her, a drummer, Megan and a bass player, Jeff, young kids.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was awesome.
And you nailed it?
We didn't get booed. You know what I mean?
You won.
We won, so we did okay. Won a little bit of money, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, man, we made it. We're in the record business.
And you never, it was always the blues that moved you?
Nah.
No?
No, no. The blues is what was kind of my introduction to music.
Yeah, but got you playing.
I thought I was going to be, I love music, but I thought I was going to be an R&B singer.
Yeah.
Like on some like Boyz II Men type shit.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, you know.
So you were singing a lot too?
I thought I was going to be on tour with NSYNC or something, you know?
Well, it's weird. Like, what, I mean, was it, because R&B, like, because I can hear that even on the new record, that you move through a lot of different sounds, and there's definitely like soul ballads on there, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, sure.
And there's definitely, you know, art, like classic R&B, like, you know, pre Boyz II Men vibe to some of this stuff.
Yeah, that's
right.
That's what I grew up listening to, you know, all that Curtis Mayfield, Temptations, Four Tops.
That's what was playing in the house?
That's what my pops was listening to, you know.
Yeah.
You couldn't touch the record player.
Oh, really? You know? Weren't allowed?
Nah, really.
Yeah.
I fucked around and tried to be a DJ on it and broke the band.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it?
Mm-mm.
That was, he broke his guitar his fucking record player.
Get away from me.
You owe this guy.
I do, actually. Damn.
So, did you do any singing with the band?
Like
just R&B setup or no?
Yeah, I had this R&B group with my guy Robbie, man, and we called ourselves Young Soul.
Uh-huh.
And
what grade was that?
This was like 6th, 7th grade.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And this guy, you know, we would pull up. The ladies loved this guy, man.
Yeah.
You know, and so we would
in sixth grade. Yeah.
And so we would at lunchtime or whatever, we'd be hanging out, and he'd be like, "Yo, G, let's sing something," you know.
Yeah.
And so we would sing whatever As Yet or Boyz II Men song was on the radio or whatever, you know,
yeah.
to these girls. We would get my other friends, you know, who were around, out, you know, and so we would
sing backup.
Yeah, they would sing backup, and we would sing these songs, man. And the girls would come up and scream, and, "Oh, Robbie," and this and that. And so that's what we thought we were going to do, you know. We called ourselves Young Soul. We had a whole trip, you know.
Yeah.
We're going to go out to L.A. and be superstar.
Oh, yeah? Do you have haircuts?
Nah, I mean, no. I just had a nice fade. You know?
Oh, yeah,
I was
yeah,
like
right.
doing that. But we were going to be edgy. So, like, grunge was happening that
yeah.
time. So, we wore like flannel. You know what I mean?
You're going to make it a broad audience.
Exactly.
We're going to get the angry white dudes are going to like us.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to get everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it was that's what I thought I was going to do. I got hell, man. You know, I was a singer in the choir, I was a choir boy, and trying to play basketball and do that. You know, I got so much hell for it. It's like, man.
They were busting on you?
They were busting on me. It was crazy.
So you went to, so that kept you in church every Sunday. I guess, singing in the choir.
It did. I had to sing in church, man. I started playing in these clubs down on 6th Street, and my mom said, if you can play for these drunks, you can go and play for Jesus.
Really? You were playing in club, wait, when you were in high school?
Yeah, 14, 15, going out and playing. And down in Austin, you spend some time in Austin, you know?
I like going to Austin. Like, I've been there, quite a few times.
Were you just there?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw you there.
Yeah.
I saw you at the Continental.
That's right.
When Jimmy was there, because I was doing a show down the street at the Paramount, and then Jimmy just happened to be in town because he was Vivino was hanging out with Vaughn. And I think you came by. Weren't you there? Didn't I see you there?
Yeah, I was drinking though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was feeling pretty good.
Yeah. And because he was there, Zapata was there, and Jimmy was there. And Billy, I know Billy, Jimmy's guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think, was he playing with him that night? Like, I know that guy from here. He was out here for a while, Billy. The guy who plays guitar.
Yeah, Billy Pittman, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He's great.
Yeah, he's a good guy. But, so I've been out there. But I that was the first time I've been to the Continental, though, even with all its history. It was kind of fun to see old Jimmy trying to keep up with Jimmy. It's very funny to, because Vaughn is he's such a grounded player. You know what I mean? He doesn't fuck around. He's not trying to be something he's not, you know? Mm-mm. So, all right, so you're singing in the choir. Oh, by the way, I just got a vinyl of the Soul Stirrers with Sam Cooke. Someone reissued it. You ever listen to that stuff?
A little.
Like, the Soul Stirrers were a gospel group, but he was with them for a while.
Right.
And Sam Cooke was with him. It's so wild to listen to that shit because you listen to it, and it's straight-up gospel stuff. But then you hear Sam Cooke's, you're like, where's that guy come? Like, he was so identifiable.
Mm-hmm.
So early on, like, just the magic of that dude's voice.
Amazing. Did you see that story on him?
No. Was it bad?
No, it was not bad. It was just a lot of information. I didn't know. It
ended badly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know. It seemed like weird. He got shot by some crazy, or I don't know, maybe he wasn't crazy. I don't know what happened.
I don't know what happened either, but it was interesting to see his story.
Oh, yeah.
What he was about. There's a lot of levels to that guy.
There was, There's a good biography that I started. I start a lot of books.
What do you mean? Like reading?
Yeah. I start them, and I get a few pages in. Okay.
I'm kind of the same way. I'm kind of the same way.
So you're playing basketball, you're doing your Boys to Men thing, you're singing in the choir. So when, what's the transition? When do you start, doing rock and blues?
Rock and blues. I started doing rock and blues. I got a Jimi Hendrix CD.
Which one?
The Ultimate Experience is like a compilation.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And it starts off Purple Haze or whatever.
Right.
And then Steve Ray Vaughan's Texas Flood.
Yeah.
Then I had friends, who were wearing Airwalks and Vans and Jean Co's and that long hair.
Yeah.
They were playing Nirvana.
Right.
So I heard Kurt Cobain, hit a stomp box. Like, that was the first thing I heard, time I heard about pedals.
Yeah.
Like a distortion
pedal. Right, yeah.
So I just kind of got into it that way. A buddy of mine, Troy, we would all kind of hang out and just play music. This guy, Aaron, was a drummer, and he would bring all this kind of music. He was listening to, Korn and Limp Bizkit and all kinds of stuff like that. So it was just kids getting together, sharing their stuff. Some of it I liked, some of it I didn't, but I heard it.
Yeah, and then that's when you started playing out, though? Around town?
No, 20 years ago. 20 years ago, sorry. 20 years ago, me and Eve, for her 15th birthday, she decided that she wanted to go out and play at a blues bar.
Eve is the one from the punk band?
Eve is the one from, the garage.
With the video games?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Right. So she wanted to go down with the talent show band.
Yeah.
And play some blues.
Yeah.
And we ended up putting our names down on the list, and we ended up playing T-Bone Shuffle and Pride and Joy.
Uh-huh.
And from there, we just kind of started. We just kept going back, and these guys.
To which club?
It's a club called, it was called Babes at the time. It was like a sports bar, a baseball sports bar and stuff like that. And so we just kept going back, and these guys would introduce us to all these artists, like T-Bone Walker, Albert Collins, Freddie King, B.B. King.
Which
Albert
guys?
King. The guys who were running the blues jam.
Yeah.
Walter Higgs, he had a band called the Shuffle Pigs.
Uh-huh.
So it was Walter Higgs and the Shuffle Pigs would host the blues jam on Sunday at Babes.
Yeah.
And they would have other people come sit in, like Keller Brothers, Moeller Brothers, Derek O'Brien. I'm not sure if you know
Derek
O'Brien. Alan Haynes. All these people would just come. And so they would just educate us, bring us CDs, bring us tapes.
Yeah.
And say, check this out, kid.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You see that you're interested in this thing, check it out. Oh, by the way, there's this radio show on Saturday, and there's this radio show on Monday.
Right.
Check it out, and you can hear all blues, and you can, you know, figure
out. So they saw it in you.
They saw it in us, you know. Clifford Antone came and picked us up.
Who's that guy?
He opened up a club in 1975 in July called Antone's, and he brought all the great blues guys, Muddy.
1975 he opened it?
Yeah, he opened it down in Austin, and, you know, brought all these great blues musicians and kind of open up the culture down there to these great artists and got people up on stage, and he introduced me to that world. And
so wait, so in 75, so he was the one that turned, like, there was a who? Oh, Johnny Winter.
Yeah.
Texan.
Mm-hmm.
But they, so that's where the Vaughn brothers started going, like, they must have been pretty younger anyways to go to Antone's.
I wasn't around for all that.
No, but like, but in the 75, so you think that he was sort of, he brought the blues to Austin in a way that made it international kind of thing. Like, you know, like there was a blues thing in Texas, but he brought all those other cats back.
I think there was a boost. I mean, we had our own kind of situation there, our own clubs, you know, Victory Grill or Bobby Blue Bland and people would come like that, but he kind of brought these young white folks and hippies out, I think, and introduced them to, like, you know, these blues guys, and so it started this kind of scene. What? Anyway, I got some crazy cotton mouth.
Yeah, you need
some water?
Can I get some water?
Yeah.
Is that cool?
I'll go grab one.
Thank you. Thank you. I was struggling.
So that guy, he managed you, Antone?
Nah, he didn't manage me. He was just kind of a mentor, introduced me to people like Hubert Sumlin, Pine Tap Perkins.
And how old were you?
Blues guys. I was 15.
So you met Hubert when you were 15?
I met him when I was 15 years old and got up on stage with him.
Really? At 15?
At 15 years old.
Did he show you some shit?
He didn't show me anything really, but he told me stories about playing with Howlin' Wolf and what that was like and being out on the road with him, and when he left Howlin' Wolf's band to go play with Muddy Waters and all this, you know, this blues history that if you're into this stuff, you know, you kind of hear about.
From the old dude?
Yeah. To hear, you know, for him to invite us back and, you know, these young kids, and he's telling us all these stories. It's incredible. It was incredible.
Yeah. And Pine Top was still alive. Who else did you meet when you were a kid?
Oh, man.
That had an impact on you.
I would have to say, you know, Jimmy Vaughn.
Yeah.
You know, really had an impact. Doyle Bramhall II.
Yeah, I just played with him.
Where were y'all at?
I played on a thing that we put together for a movie that I was a part of. Like, we did a song together, but then I saw him over at that Roots Music Festival, or that benefit that Jimmy hosted. He's sort of an amazing player, Doyle.
Yeah, he's great.
Like, you know, he can just sort of, like, he can get anything.
Yeah.
Right? And what's that other dude? Like, I don't know, he's one of the brothers. Who's the guy that plays with Dylan?
Charlie Sexton.
Yeah, the Sexton. There's a couple of them, aren't there?
Charlie Will.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he's like a kind of a monster on the guitar too, huh?
Yeah, he's incredible.
Yeah.
He's a beast, man.
And so you're there, you're 15. Now, did you know when you play with somebody like Hubert Sumlin and you're 15, it's like, that's heavy. Like, I just played with those guys and I'm 55. And I've been playing my whole life, but I don't ever play with people. And it was like it's a little much.
Yeah.
To step up. Yeah. You know, I played with Slash and Jimmy on Stepping Out. And like, I'd been practicing, but like, you know, you start when you get nervous and you start to freak out. My fingers were stiff.
Mm-hmm. I always mess it up somehow.
But if you got a good band there, you don't notice it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah,
you'll notice it, but they're taking care of you, right?
They got you covered.
Were you learning Sumlin riffs? I mean, by the time you played with Hubert, were you able to do that? You know, any of those fucking Wolf riffs?
Yeah, I was really getting into it. All that stuff. It was.
He's a weird player too, huh? Very unique.
Just thumb.
It's all thumb? Do you play with your thumb?
Mm-hmm. I kind of mix it all up.
Yeah, a lot of dudes are playing with their thumbs now. Is that was that always the case? Because like I never even thought about playing with my fucking thumb until like everybody, all these goddamn hipsters now, like Sweeney's like, yeah, I'm doing mostly my thumb now. It's like, what the fuck is that about?
I didn't know that was a thing. You sound upset about it.
Well, I'm upset about it because I just figured out how to use a pick. I'm barely able to use a fucking pick.
They switch up on you now.
Yeah, I use these fat picks. Look at that. That's an Ed King pick from V-Pix.
I don't know how you use these things.
I that's what I use. I don't know. Like, I had a guitar teacher when I was a kid named Vaughn McMillan, who we used to play with a sanded quarter. Like literally a quarter that he had taken the edge off. And then I just always thought that hard picks were the way. Lou Reed told me I should use a medium, but then like for some reason I saw Albert King's pick. He uses a big old thing like that, and maybe not as thick, and that's just what I got to using.
This feels like a rock to me.
I know this, but all right. What do you use?
Little mediums. Oh. Little mediums, nothing special.
But like the thumb thing, I guess it was because like those cats, like probably Lightning, R.L. Burnside, you know, I think probably even Magic Sam. I mean, they're doing a thumb thing.
Kind of like folk picking.
Yeah, but like, I don't know how you get the speed. How do you get the speed with your thumb? And a lot of those dudes played with two fingers.
I quit doing that so much after I gave up on the Sam's Boogie / Looking Good. So it's more about the pick.
It broke you.
It broke me, man. I divert. You cancel route.
I love watching that video, man. I fucking
The snare with the wallet on it.
Yeah, and there's not even it's not even his guitar. That's the other thing. It's like this wasn't even his guitar.
Yeah,
and he laid that out.
So you have no excuses. You know?
Yeah.
How did you get into all that stuff?
For blues?
Yeah, just music in general.
I don't know, man. It was just always like I think like the more I think about it, it was probably my my old man. Like he listened. He really liked oldies shit, you know. So I was always gravitated towards. I was sort of obsessed with Johnny B. Goode and with Chuck Berry, and then from there I got back to the blues, and I've been listening to it a long time, but I don't know why it moves me so much, because I like playing it. And I'm constantly learning about it, but I listen to all kinds of music, but when I play that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the most satisfying.
Yeah.
So how does it go from there? So you're 15. When do you start getting like big attention? So you played with someone there. Mm-hmm. Who else did you play with when you were a kid?
I went out on tour with Jimmy Vaughn.
Okay. So, and the Thunderbirds?
No, it was Jimmy Vaughn and the Tilt-A-Whirl Band.
Was that with Billy?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was Billy Pittman.
Yeah.
He had Luann Barton singing with him.
Oh, wow.
And so I was 19, right out of high school.
Yeah.
And went out on tour with him, went all over the U.S.
Did you have a band or were you playing with them?
I did have a band. We opened up. I had a band. Jay Moeller on drums, James Bullard on bass, Matt Farrell on keys, and we followed them around. I drove myself.
Texas or all over the country?
All over the country. All over the country. I followed him around, and that's when people started kind of...
Playing clubs.
I was too young to be in the club, so I would play, and then I'd have to sit outside.
Really? Yeah. While he was on?
Yeah. So, and maybe sometimes they'd let me, like, hang out.
Did you come on to play with him for a couple tunes?
I would sometimes.
Yeah.
But, they wouldn't let me in.
Yeah. Were you playing originals?
I was playing a couple of originals, which were basically like the same idea of what my Don't Owe You a Thing is to Sam's Boogie.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was like they were...
Right. They were...
Like, shitty blues songs.
Homage. Okay, yeah. Shitty blues songs.
Shitty wannabes.
Yeah, bar blues songs.
Yeah. You know, 19, yeah. What do I know? Somebody said, you don't know anything about the blues. You wait till you get your heart broken. So I was doing that and just doing covers.
Is that true, do you think? Like, because that's the weird thing about it. What is the difference between shitty bar blues and the real thing? You know, because like it's one of those weird things. I think it sort of broke the music in that, any half-asses could play it. And play it good enough to get people's feet moving. But, what is the defining factor? Is it just a stylistic thing? Do you know when you changed from that? Do you know when you shifted? Could you feel the shift from I'm just doing a cover to, like, now I'm in it?
Yeah, when the lyrics that you're singing, you can visualize where the actual emotion comes from.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, because like I've always wondered about that. Yeah, that the blues just became this, you know, just like everybody could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start listening, even start listening to some of the sort of like white boogie bands, you know, like Canned Heat even. But, you know, but then if you really listen to Canned Heat, they're like, they were real students of the shit. Those guys, some of those dudes were like studying the shit. And then they kind of like, they'd find their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that must be it, is when you make it your own.
Yeah, they got to be your stories. You got to be in your own shoes.
So when you start touring with Jimmy, like did that change things? When how far along before you did the record, the first record?
I was making records all throughout.
You were?
Just kind of funded myself doing the broke, starving artist thing by choice, you know?
Yeah.
But, so that was, I didn't really get into serious music business type stuff, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
You know,
Were you making singles, EPs?
I was making singles, I was making EPs, I was drinking, I was hanging out, I was partying, you know.
Living the life,
you know. I was just taking my time, not wanting to rush anything, not wanting to, you know, wanting to be sure about who I was as a, you know, artist and just as a man. And, you know, I'm seeing young people who became famous and, you know.
You also see young people who become dead.
Right. Exactly. And so I was just trying to figure it out and live without being in public.
You know,
the whole idea of that kind of freaked me out. So I was scared to jump. I was scared to take that leap. You know, I was just kind of figuring it out.
And I think you sort of reckon with that in that song on Black and was it Black and Blue?
Mm.
The Life.
Mm-hmm.
Where like, right?
Yeah.
So you like, is this what it is?
Yeah.
Or is this do I got to not be this?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it was cool. There was having a reputation around town and being able to move around and things were.
What was the reputation?
Just being a talented musician, you know.
But not being a fuck up.
Yeah, not being a fuck up. Right. I mean, I was having a good time, but you know,
it was a disaster.
Like, nah.
Yeah.
But, well, I don't think so. Some people might say different. But
that's your point of view.
Yeah, I think I was all right.
Fuck those people.
Yeah, exactly. But I think who was it? Alejandro Escovedo maybe said that Austin is like a velvet rut or something.
A velvet rut.
Something like that, where it's like a comfortable place to you can make it, but it's so comfortable to stay there that you don't really need to go anywhere. And
well,
you
also, kind
of, you don't want to.
Right. No, I did a joke when I was there. I said, this one, if you're a, I don't remember how I framed it, but the idea was, you know, if you're a musician in this town, you've probably said this once or twice, hey, I'm back.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yo. Perfect.
Oh man.
Oh God. So good. I'm just seeing faces. Walking back into the club like, oh man, how was it? Yeah. I'm back here now.
Yeah. Right?
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Couldn't, you know, just things didn't really work out.
And then eventually you hear the story.
Yeah.
From a couple of different sides.
That is perfect.
Yeah, well, that is the thing about Austin. So, you could have done that. So, how did it change for you? I mean, like, you know, you knew that you were in the groove.
I was in the groove, but I was also out of money.
Yeah,
and I didn't want to do anything else. And I'm sitting in my house, And I've got all this gear that I've collected and all these songs that are sitting on the shelf, and I'm kind of scared to put out because it's not blues, and I'm thinking that the blues police are going to come shut me down.
Interesting. So that was a thing.
It was kind of a thing.
You were dug in with that community.
Oh, yeah.
It's like comedy, you know, you don't want to be a hack.
Right.
And, you want to be true to the shit.
Right. I'm struggling, you know.
So you were, that was like a dark night of the soul. Like, I gotta do an R&B song.
I might start to, gotta get to dancing or something. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And that was a struggle.
It was a struggle. And thinking back on it, it was like, it was stupid how in my head I was about it.
Well, what you don't realize is that, like, whoever you think that the blues police are or whoever that audience is still pretty small at that point.
Right.
Right?
But it's everything.
Of course. It's your whole life.
It's your world.
You know, because you got to walk into that club and, you know, if you got a hit song that, you know, has got a little too much hip hop in it, or it's a little too, weak.
Look at this motherfucker.
Yeah. What are you back? You want to try to get your manhood back? Yeah. Can you still play your guitar?
Exactly. This fool don't even know what a shuffle is anymore.
Right. It's the shuffle. That is the Texas thing, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so you're having that moment.
So, yeah, I'm sitting in the dark. I'm lighting these candles and, you know, scraping my last little bit of herb off the table.
Yeah.
Going, what the fuck, man? And Doyle Bramhall calls me and says, yo, man, Clapton is thinking about having you for this Crossroads Festival 2010 in Chicago. I was like, do not fuck with me right now. Like, yeah. I'm fragile. Yeah.
I've got very little herb left.
Yeah, it's fragile, man. Yeah. I got, you know, one packet of ramen left. Don't fuck with me.
Yeah.
And so sure enough, I get the call, man. I get flown out there. Changed my life, put me in front of 27,000 people.
Did Eric call you?
He did not call me. I got a letter in the mail.
A letter?
I got a nice letter in the mail.
Yeah. Wow, that's old school.
Very old school.
That's great. And you had never met him?
I never met him. Mm. I never met him. I still don't really talk to him. I went up to him at the festival and I was like, thanks for having me. He goes, thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Kind of walked away. I was like, all right, cool. I see how this is going to be. Respect.
I feel like he's not a big talker.
Nah.
So, okay, so you do that and then you tour with that? You do the Crossroads thing?
I do the Crossroads thing, and then some label guys come up and they say, hey, kid.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I think we can work with you. And sure enough, and just from there, go on tour, and it's been cool, you know.
The label guys, like, what record they put out for you?
They put out Black and Blue for me. Black and Blue.
That was the first big record.
That was the first, big record. Andy Oliphant, you know, I got to give it up to him. He believed in me. And, took me up to that company.
Which company?
Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And said, hey, man, this kid's got something. And so I was able to do Black and Blue, which was cool.
And then toured the fuck out of it?
Toured the fuck out of it.
And that was then, when did you take on Zapata? When did he become part of the lineup? Because I think he's a great guitar player.
Yeah, Zapata became part of the lineup. We went to school together. We were in high school together. He
really?
Was a year older than me.
Did he always wear the poncho?
Nah, he was a clean cut dude, like, you know, nice polo shirts, button down, you know, boots, cool dude, you know, drove a Camaro.
Uh-huh. Oh, really? Know, yeah.
He was that dude, you know what I mean? And so,
but always a player?
Always a player.
Yeah.
Yeah, from Dallas. So, he came down and we started kind of hanging. At first, his friends would come up to me and like, be like, my boy Zapata can smoke you on guitar. Mm-hmm. Like, you ain't shit. And I'm like, what? You know?
Who is this guy?
So I kind of stayed away from him, and he would just kind of like,
yeah,
go through the halls or whatever. And so we ended up hanging out at a party, ended up becoming close, you know, kicking it every day. Then he's staying at my house one time, and I'm working on these demos, and I got this CD that's like tucked into my CD shelf. You know, it's like an unmarked thing that I know where it is, and it's my shit that I'm not, you know, I'm still working on it.
Right.
He finds it somehow while I'm asleep. I wake up in the morning, he's like, hey man, I found your music. Your band would sound better if I was in it.
So and that was it?
That was it.
Had you played with him at all?
We played a little bit. We go down in these blues jams and this stuff, and we get up on stage together.
Was there a competitive nature to it? Was there like a sort of like a dozens version of playing guitar? You know, like in the sense of like, you know, like these, were you trying to show each other up? See, that always intimidated me. Like, and also knowing that with blues, like, it's not about speed, man. But, you know, what? It is?
No. It's, I don't know what it is, but there is this competitive thing, you know? It's like, you know, well, if you play super fast, I'm going to play one fucking note, and it's going to mean everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that's the challenge of the guy who can't play fast.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Mm. And, but
it's a phrasing, man. It ain't the speed.
Exactly. There's all this conversation. You know, I hate guitar players, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's fun. It's a competitive thing because you don't want to get left behind.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
Like, even to this day, Zapato, he'll be on stage, and we'll be at sound check, and he'll play some, like, new lick that he's learned. I'd be like, what was that? He'd be like, don't worry about it.
And then he'd bring it out?
Yeah. And then he's got something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Still, to this day.
You know, it's like, man, Zapato solo was badass.
Yeah. All right.
That motherfucker.
You gotta give him something.
He got to, I guess. Poncho, man.
He's got the poncho. Poncho's got at least something for Poncho.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but he plays, what the hell is that guitar he plays, though, right? He plays a weird guitar, right?
I don't know. He won't tell me. He won't tell me what gear he's playing. All his pedals are taped up.
Oh, really? And you're playing with him every night?
I have no idea what he's doing over there.
Yeah. but you're happy he's there?
I'm happy he's there. I'm happy.
But he was with you on that first tour? He's been with you all that time?
Yeah, the whole time. The whole time. Yeah.
I saw you open for the Stones in San Diego.
Okay. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then I saw you with Derek here, I think, with Tedeschi. Did you open for Trucks?
At the Greek, yeah.
Yeah, at the Greek. I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I
then
love that crew.
Yeah, what a tight band. Like, yeah. Trucks is like, he's like a orchestra leader.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's such a, like, kind of a heads down, kind of doing kind of guy. But when you watch him, you're like, oh, he's running all of it.
Yeah.
Right? He just looks over, like, and that's it. You know, hey, turn around. Here's where we're stopping. I'm done now.
Yeah, exactly. He's so subtle, man. He makes me reevaluate my life.
He does?
Sometimes. Yeah, I mean, just, he's so cool with it. And it's like, man, I make the craziest looking faces, and I'm on my,
yeah.
And he can just get these beautiful sounds
and not
powerful,
make faces.
And he's just standing there.
He's like one of those. He's a savant, you know. Like, it was, you know, he's one of those guys where somehow or another he was just born with all the licks in his head. He just had to find them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Other people have to learn them. They were already in his wiring.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. It was interesting. I talked to him. The whole struggle to not be, to be able to play like he played when he was like 10, you know, and then be, you know, brought on stage and shown to the world at that age with what he could do. Like, he had to fight the freak thing. Like, he didn't want to just be this weird little, like, watch the little guy do this. Like,
yeah.
He had to, after all that, he had to actually make it real.
Right.
And not be some sort of dog and pony show.
Wow, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, man. It's like, they're like, we're going to bring out this kid that's going to blow you away. And like, a lot of times I think those kids that are, they just end up like, no, oh, yeah, that was me when I was 7. I work on cars now. I don't really do it. You know what
right.
I mean? Like,
right, right. Like, yeah. People who, you know, forced to take piano lessons and don't want to get near a piano type of thing.
Well, more so like they just have this natural ability and they get blown out early because everyone thinks it's some sort of freak show.
Right.
And then, like, you know, they can't live up to it. How do you make that real? How do you follow up being able to do, you know, Dwayne Allman solos when you're 10 to become your own dude? How is it not a gimmick? That's the real, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
I got you.
But he certainly took it way out there.
Yeah.
Now, when you play...
He seems to be doing all right.
Oh, he's great. Yeah. When you play with guys like that, or did you play... You played with Clapton, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You open for them?
Yes.
And but you didn't talk much to him?
Nah, I'd stay out the way.
Yeah. But when you share a stage with those guys and you trade licks with them, like, you know, does that make you a better player? Do you, are you more aware of it, or do you just, are you, can you just relax into that?
No, I'm not relaxed at all. I'm not relaxed at all. I walk past.
I felt that about you. I think that was one of the reasons where I'm like, he seems pretty intense, a little hard on himself, this guy, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, he's not quite having fun up there, but luckily he's playing blues. So.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great observation. It's embarrassing, but it's the truth. But, you know, like Jimmy Vaughn, he'll come up on stage, we'll play together, and he'll look at my pedal board and he'll be like, what the fuck is all that?
Right.
You know? Play on stage with Clapton, get done with the finale.
Yeah.
And he'll be like, oh, you like reverb, don't you?
Oh, no.
Like, fuck. You know? It messes with me. So the next gig, I'm like, no reverb.
No pedals.
No pedals.
Okay, play clean like Robert Cray for the rest of the time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right into the amp.
So no, there's no selling into that. I'm like, man, I'm ready to do my own shit.
Oh, the slight dig.
Yeah, exactly.
You like reverb, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I broke my hand last year doing some dumb shit, and I went up, the first gig I played was Love Rocks in New York, and I'm playing with Keith Richards and Robert Cray, and I've got my hand in a cast, and I'm trying to figure it out, and I come straight from the doctor in this new thing.
You probably sounded exactly like Keith. With just clomping around on the rhythm.
Yeah, but he goes, he says to me, after the first take, he goes, you're just here for the pictures, aren't you? I was like, fuck. So these experiences, and people are like, oh, how are they? They come with these jabs and this, like, make me reevaluate my whole thing. Oh,
man. Just here for the pictures.
It's rough out here. I mean, is it the same way with you guys in the comedy stuff?
Sure. I mean, I don't know that we yeah, it's definitely the same way, you know, but in terms of like jokes and stuff, we're not, yeah. The problem is that compliments are rare, and when they do happen, they always come with, they always take a little. They give, but they take a little.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I was working on a bit like that. Yours is funny, you know. I got a bit that's kind of like that, but it's not the same. I like yours. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But you just got to know when you hit it. Like, as you get older, I think you know. But if you're hard on yourself, there's always going to be one dude where you're sort of like, yeah, why can't I just make it as easy as that? But you don't know what the hell they're going through. But these old guys, I mean, that's the weird thing about old guys is that they're not going to get out of the way. You know, they're just not going to, you know what I mean? And with that world, because that guitar world, certainly how music has changed, the blues guitar world is a smaller world. It was always sort of a small world. So you got this handful of old guys that are still hanging on.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's only a few young guys that even want to fucking do it anyways, right? Yeah. Like, you're it. You're the guy now.
Right.
So there's a lot of pressure on you. But these old guys are going to be, they don't think in terms of like, you know, you think like, when you think about the real tradition of it, that there's a tradition to this thing that should be carried on. You know, like somewhere along the line, I don't know if it's with the white dudes, but somewhere that stopped and became like, the fuck is this guy think he is? You know, so.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So like, you know, it's like whatever the tradition was, you know, it's not, you know, it kind of. Because you can really see it with certain dudes, and you can definitely see it in you. But, like, it should be a completely supportive place because, like, this music is barely alive, you fuckers. You know, like, why don't we all get on board and keep trying to, we're trying to make a living here,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, fan the flame.
Yeah, why not? Do you find that? Like how do your records, how'd that record sell? How'd Black and Blue do?
It did all right, you know. I honestly, I don't really pay that much attention to
really
the numbers and stuff like that. I don't know specifics.
But just as long as they let you make another one?
Yeah, yeah. As long as they call me back and go, hey, it's time for another one.
But it seems to me that, like, this record is very, you know, it's very honest, and, you know, you take on some shit, you know.
A little bit.
You know, race, love, things, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of textures to the songs. You know, you do some R&B stuff. You do some old school R&B. You do some straight up blues, and then you do, you know, even you know, moving towards R&B hip hop a little, right?
Yeah.
So like it's a well versed record, but it seems like you know that what really put you on the map were those live records, right?
Yeah, the live records really did that for me.
Because it still seems that, like, you know, there's enough people out there looking for a guitar hero, you know, of a certain type.
Yeah.
That, you know, they want, you know what I mean? And you must feel the pressure, like, well, I got to do that. And, like, that's the extension of that blues thing. It's like, I got to go out there and lay this shit down.
Yeah, but you know what? I've been in my comments lately on social media.
Yeah.
You know, and I saw something that said, I thought this guy was supposed to say rock blues. Guess not.
Oh.
And it didn't hurt my feelings as bad as I thought it would.
Oh, good.
So I'm cool. You know what I mean? Like, I don't feel any.
What if there had been three?
Maybe a little bit more. You know what I mean? Yeah, might have started to tear up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it. Pressure to do what, man? Like, fuck.
Yeah.
It's not that serious.
Right.
It's
right.
Really not that serious.
And who are those fucking dudes? The worst thing about those dudes and those kind of comments is that it plays into that the same feeling, you know, when you're with just a little bit of herb, like I can't let these fucking old angry bitter motherfuckers who are back. You know, dictate, you know, but they're still you know, there's still something that wants to please those dudes, right? Because somehow or another, we get it twisted in our head that those are the guys with integrity. It's like, what else have they got? They're fucking, you know, bitter. They do one thing. You know, is that integrity? Did they even try to do the other thing? I don't think so. But those are the guys whose approval we need so desperately. Right?
Right. So right. Thanks for breaking that down.
I'm here to help you, pal.
I appreciate it. I didn't know I needed this like that.
But like, so okay, so this record just came out.
Yeah.
And you're touring with, it's what, This Land it's called,
this
right?
This Land is what it's called, yeah.
And now, did you picture this as a whole piece? I mean, like, when you say something, when you call something This Land and you're dealing with the stuff you're dealing on there,
mm-hmm.
when these songs came together, do you think in terms of an album or do you think in terms of a song, really?
I think it's in terms of a song. I'm just making a song to make a song.
Yeah.
You know? I don't think about it that much.
Yeah.
I just do it, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's when the people who are trying to make this thing move come in with their thoughts and opinions.
Right. Maybe not this one. How about this one?
Yeah.
This one's got a hook. This will be the single.
Whatever, man. You know, it's like I didn't pick the single. I didn't pick, you know, the title of the, you know, I'm just trying to figure this out. No, it was, you know, there was like deadlines, you know.
Right.
I'm busy. I got stuff to do and, you know, family and stuff. And it's like, hey, we got to put this out now.
Okay.
We
got
to do this.
House.
We got to do this. Yeah, yeah. I'm dealing with shit.
Yeah.
You call it what you want, man. Yeah. I don't give a fuck.
You really?
Yeah, for this one, you know, at that particular time where I was, you know, it was like, you know, we've got these deadlines and we need, what are you going to call it? It's like, we need an answer tomorrow. They're trying to, it's like, I don't know. I just got out of the studio. I'm trying to sit back and figure out what I did, you know, let me breathe and understand what it is.
Sure.
When you're writing or creating, before you come in and tell me how to move, like, back the fuck up.
Yeah, let me see how it all fits together.
Hold
on. I just did the thing.
Yeah, but we got to move this. Yeah. All right, then call it what you want, you know?
Were you mad?
No. I wasn't mad. It was, you know, I wasn't mad at all. It was just like, I can't think right now.
Yeah.
And the pressure is making me a little bit crazy. So
right.
You guys can do it. That's how it worked for this one.
But like, there's like, but I mean, you seem to cover, you know, you took on a lot of shit here.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, it's just like, people go through shit in their life. You know what I mean? And
how long did it take you to write all this stuff? It
took me a couple of years, I think.
Yeah.
In between, you know, life happened and touring. We tour so much.
And you got married and shit. Was that the same time?
Babies and stuff. Yeah, I make babies and children.
You made two?
I got two. I got two little ones. But yeah, so it's, it just seems like it works out that I make a record and then a child is coming.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Same like, time?
Everything hits at once.
It's both born at the same time? The kid and the record?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Pretty much.
So where are you playing next? Where does it go from here?
Where does it go from here? We start up on tour. We're hitting Miami. We go all over the U.S. We're going to Australia. We're doing Europe. We're doing Fuji Rock.
Beach What's that?
Band. Oh, yeah. Band, yeah.
And how you drawing? Pretty good?
How are we what?
You selling tickets?
We're doing all right, man. For the most part, I think we're selling out.
Well, that's great.
It's crazy.
That's great.
Yeah.
And people are liking the new record?
They're loving it.
That's great.
Yeah, they're loving it. It's been good.
And when you look out at the audience, who are you seeing primarily? Is it pretty eclectic, pretty diverse, or is it?
Yeah, it's becoming more diverse.
Yeah,
you know, in the beginning it was, you know, because it was supposed to be this rock blues savior guy.
Guitar hero, man.
There's a lot of
dudes.
Hendrix T-shirts and ponytails and standing there with their arms crossed, like I could do it better than this asshole. You know, so it's kind of changed up, and I see a lot of everybody. It's cool,
great.
Man, that this music stuff can do that.
Yeah.
You know, like, what you do, too, is like...
Well, we're limited, but yeah, but no, music's magic, you know, comedy, you know, you can be... The clown's good for a few years.
Oh, man, I don't think so. Mm. I think it's heavier than that, and much more of a... We need that shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We need both. Yeah, certainly.
Need it.
So we got to hold the line, you know? It's up to the musicians, the comics, and the fucking journalists at this point, because everything else is falling apart.
Yeah, we got to team up, man.
Yeah, you got to team up and make sure humanity is represented.
Exactly.
Yeah? Exactly. Push back.
Exactly.
All right, buddy. Well, have a great tour, man.
Thank you. What are you doing? Are you touring, or what do you got?
I am. I'm going to go... Well, I'm finishing up shooting this show I'm on, and then, I'm going to do some clubs. I'll be out in Texas at some point. I'll do Dallas, Houston, and I'll do Austin. And, I'm going to, do some clubs, and I'm going to do some theaters, and I'm going to go to the UK for a few dates, and I'm going to shoot a special in the fall. That's the plan.
Awesome.
Right now, I'm building the hour. You know?
Gotcha.
Yeah, building the thing. You know, I'm doing that Sunday, tomorrow night, Sunday night, so the last few Sundays I've been doing this little theater, seats 200, and I just, fucking... Try to figure it out.
You got you.
Yeah, that's how I jam.
I understand that.
All right.
I feel you.
Good talking to you.
Likewise.
That's it. That's me and Gary Clark Jr. I like talking to guitar players. I was pretty excited, apparently. I had a lot, I felt like I did a lot of talking on that one. And also, as I mentioned before, Gary's new album is This Land. That's available wherever you want to get your records or your sounds or your things that you put in your ears. Go to WTFpod.com/tour for all those new tour dates I brought up. You can still send emails, asking questions or saying things about our 1,000th episode or about the entire arc of our show. And I'll play a little guitar now. I will play a little guitar. Gary didn't, but I will. Boomer lives.